Hello and welcome back to Album with me, Arslan Mohammed. And in this episode, we bring to a close the mammoth interview I did in late 2023 with Dr. Leah Cardos, the author, musician, co-founder and director of the Visconti Studio at Kingston University in London. We've been talking about 2013's The Next Day, and in this episode, we're focusing on the accompanying mini-album, The Next Day Extra, which came out in November 2013. It packaged up a couple of album track remixes with a bunch of new songs that hadn't made it onto the final LP. In some cases, they'd been updated with new vocals, lyrics and production since the bulk of the album recording sessions took place. But, as you'll hear, it's no ragtag assortment of rejects and offcuts. The Next Day Extra is a fine standalone release in itself. These are songs which really, really stand alongside the accompanying album, and in my opinion, occasionally surpass them. So, as you don't really hear that much about Extra, we had a lot to say about each track, and I'd love to know what you think about it. So drop me a line when you've had a listen to this, let me know what your thoughts are. All right, so we're going to crack straight on, and we start off with Atomica.
Atomica, what do you reckon?
I like this. I really like this. This reminds me of, it reminds me quite a lot of the title track of The Next Day, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many Atomica haters out there. And
really?
I'm an Atomica fancier. Yeah. No, I quite dig this song. I used to have it on my running playlist and I enjoyed it.
Oh, it's good for that.
Yeah, it's great for that. It's got a great beat. But the whole middle section, I hold myself like a god. I'm down with that. That's really great. I like the fake strings on that Korg Trinity. They're properly naff, but in a really nice way. I like the way he throws away the word babe all the time through the track. I think it's really eccentric. I got a lot of time for it. And also, I will say that there are some things on this track that helped me with my book in terms of like crystallizing ideas about this idea, because he sort of sings about a pop star chopping away at something, and this idea of the sort of Atomica, the proton atomic chain that he sort of quotes in Black Star. And he even says, you know, I'm a little puny but I talk too much, and that sort of talks a little bit about the Nietzschean ideas that he brings up. So for me, it was a really nice little meditation time. It helped me crystallize a lot of ideas, this song.
That does link into that really neatly, doesn't it? Definitely those themes.
Well, it brought them to the surface for me as I was listening to this playlist I made as I was running around the streets of NW9. And I've got a lot of time for this track. A lot of people don't like it. I remember thanking Erin Tonkin for it, like, because she did a bit of production and she did some vocals in it. I said, I really like it. And she was like, why? Why do you like it?
I'm definitely Team Atomica. I think this one is an absolute banger.
We need to make a T-shirt. Yeah, I think it's good.
Perhaps it, you know, one of the reasons it was left off was maybe obviously they hadn't completed the lyrics by the time the album came out. But musically, I felt there was a lot of parallels between the title track and Atomica. I mean, it's pretty much the same. I mean, you might be able to articulate that in a much more coherent manner, but just to me, the feel of it was, you know, that kind of 4/4 and like the structure of it was very much like,
I like the riff.
It's very close.
And that like slap bass bit that comes in. I think maybe the lyric in the chorus, you know, let's get this show on the road, let's get Atomica, is a bit, I don't know.
But maybe
like the song.
Maybe it's another one from this musical. You know, it sounds like
the
lights come on and the whole chorus line is there sort of dancing around. Let's get this show on the road, Atomica.
Yeah. This song does make me smile. I do like it. Right, next.
So next up, we'll very quickly just revisit Love is Lost, because this is the James Murphy mix. So again, it was Hostage, Transference, Identity. And Atomica ends with this fade into everyone clapping. It works wonderfully. And then James Murphy, and I read somewhere that he was obsessed with Steve Reich's clapping music from 1972. Yeah. So then it segues into him and a gang of groovy, heavy friends all doing the clapping, which kicks off this mix, which I really like. I really, really love this mix because, I mean, in its longest, most elongated version, it's just hypnotic.
It takes five and a half minutes for the beat to kick in, and then And then by the time it gets going, you're like, hang on, what? It's finished? And it's already 10 minutes 25 when it's done. No, I love it.
It's great.
And I think, you know, it brings in the bits from Ashes to Ashes, which is so nicely woven in.
That's
it's
lovely,
got
isn't
this
it?
Slow burn to it. The video is, wow, like one of my favorite David Bowie videos. So good, yeah. I mean, just the drama. I mean, ooh, all those characters, what are they doing? They're all looking at each other. He's washing his hands like Lady Macbeth. I love it so much. And also, like, it sort of makes sense that he wanted to work with James Murphy because he'd just come relatively recently off the Reflector record with the Arcade Fire.
Yeah.
And
that's,
you know,
where they met,
him to the Black Star Sessions. Yeah, so, you know, I think there's definitely a kind of vibe, a sort of reflective vibe, that kind of disco, dub disco type feel with the analog synths in it. But for whatever reason, he didn't stick around. Although I did get this nice tidbit of a story from Tony, is that James was in the studio for Black Star Sessions and he had a cold and Coco kicked him out.
Oh, really?
Because so, he couldn't be sick around David. So
obviously, yeah.
That's
yeah.
a nice little story, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But I do love that Ashes to Ashes lick that they sample as well. It just feels works so
right.
beautifully. Yeah, exactly.
Feels so right.
It feels
yeah.
just right. It just fits in there. It sits in there absolutely perfectly.
So satisfying. And then in the video with a little puppet with a little spongy foot yeah. just tapping to the beat. So cute.
I think if you haven't seen this video, and there's a great little anecdote about this video, that it only cost $12.99 to make, which was the cost of the flash drive for Bowie to save it on his camera. Apparently they just recorded it in a puppet.
Oh, in the Isola offices.
In the offices, yeah. And it was just done very quickly on the hoof, and bam, you have this fantastic... And it won awards, I think. I think it won a prize or some Mercury... It was debuted at the Mercury Music Awards. And then in itself it won a prize. So that is genius. Right, moving
so
on to
yes.
The Informer. One of the striking things about The Informer is he's singing in that sort of tight upper register of
oh,
his
yeah.
again. You know, we've got that
yes.
voice back.
Yeah, the tone his voice takes when he sings the words "There's a pool of blood." It's just so good. It's so dramatic. But what I really love about this is like the backing vocals, all of those layers, like the
yes.
bomb. Boom, 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 boom. And all these guys in the background, there's like, there must be 20 of them. It's just such an amazing sound.
I've read that it's 12, that there were 12 overdubs of backing vocals on this.
Crazy.
And it sounds it, right? It's just...
Yeah, it really,
you know,
does.
It's absolutely epic. It's also got a little bit of a throwback to, you know, there are rock and roll suicide chords in here as well.
Yes.
And then you've got that little shout out to Changes at the end. I still don't know what we were looking for, but it wasn't you.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I didn't pick up for the longest time because, you know, I'm so focused on the music. But yeah, it's got a few little callbacks in there, which I think are significant. You know, maybe not as elegantly executed as You Feel So Lonely You Could Die. Maybe that's why this one's on the B-side
yeah.
list and not on the main record. But the bass sound is something that like is so fat and chunky.
It's great, isn't it? I mean, even
Tony Levin has to be, right? Tony Levin doing the bass on this. It's,
I think it's Gale.
Is it?
I've got it written somewhere that it's Gale.
Oh, Bowie Bible would know, wouldn't they?
Bowie Bible would know. And I have to give a shout out to Bowie Bible for all the amazing research and collating of random interviews and articles about pretty much every song you could think of. I mean, it's definitely when I do the research for this. And I think I've got a note here from Bowie Bible, which is Leonard and Torn play hypnotic guitars, Dorsey and Alford hold down the funky beat. Yeah, yeah.
That bass is remarkable. I mean,
it's incredibly
I feel
funky.
Kind of affronted that they didn't make a special mention of it there in that entry, holding down the beat. That bass is like front and center.
Yeah, yeah.
It's huge.
Brilliant. I'm definitely on board for this track. I really love these tracks, the extra Next Day tracks, in that they're so... There's a kind of zip and verve and energy to them. It's almost like, I mean, I know it wasn't consciously recorded in this way. It almost feels like, yeah, all right, the heavy work of the album is done. Let's just have fun. Bam, one, two, three, go. You know, there's definitely a sort of air of spontaneity and inventiveness.
But I mean, like, yeah, totally. But this is like not a throwaway song. I mean, particularly...
No, not at all.
He's sort of singing about God here. You know, that third verse where he's like, I've got major questions about the Lord above and about Satan below, about the way we love, about the room at the top and the people coming up. And he just sort of, you know, he's articulating these really heavy ideas in this song, which, you know, again, could be about a hitman, you know, or some kind of spy situation. And the ambiguity is delicious. It makes you want to try and make the connections. And I think that, I mean, this is one of the reasons why The Next Day is such a great piece of work, is that he forces you to take a step towards him and do something active to make it all work.
You have to engage.
And you have to engage, or else it's really not going to work at all. You have to step up and connect this to this in order to make the meaning that's going to work for you. And it sort of echoed all the way through the artistry, you know, and even in the front cover, it's like, you know, asking you a question, well, what is this, you know, and what can be here? And the songs are asking, well, what can this be about? You know, all these pieces can fit together in these different ways. And in this song, you know, you can kind of see the architecture of that template in this song. And it works. Yeah. I think it's great. Really good song.
And they put Boss of Me on the album. They left this off. I don't know.
Yeah. What was he thinking?
Like a Rocket Man, this is just completely bonkers. To me, this was almost like revisiting the 60s. You know,
it's about cocaine addiction, isn't it?
Little Wendy cocaine, but the sound of it, you know, there's kind of like, it's got a sort of kinksy, slightly mod
Beatles
feel to it.
Sounds like Beatles to me. And isn't there a Beatles line in it? Something about Yesterday in there somewhere? There is a lyric about Yesterday in there that feels very Beatlesy, but also the double tracked vocals.
I kind of copied a few lines here that just really struck me. Now I wish that yesterday was just tomorrow, and I could squeeze her grabby hand, knowing that I never paid her for a gram. She's a drunken doxy off her trolley, sent before her time into this poxy world. I mean, you can imagine that
poxy.
She is sent before her time into this poxy world. She's not fit for anything but dealing it. While heaven sings, I have this girl. She's got me eating rice and beans. I have no shape nor colour. I'm God's lonely man. I don't want to die, but I don't want to live. I'm speeding like a rocket, man.
I love the word poxy. That's so good. Yes.
Poxy is what, like, Spiv would say in the 1960s. Here, get your poxy hands off me.
Then off her trolley. Drunken doxy,
she's
off her trolley.
Yeah. She's a drunken doxy off her trolley, sent before the time into this boxy world. When have you heard him refer back to that period, his 60s period?
I mean, aside from Toy, not...
Well, exactly,
often,
but...
Not really, yeah. I mean, this feels like a Toy-type song.
But Toy was, in many cases, was taking the songs out of that idiom and placing them in this... like contemporary idiom, wasn't it? So he was losing the formal attributes of those very sort of like jaunty, quirky 60s, you know, music hall songs. And he was making them quite, think of something like Conversation Piece, which becomes this incredibly somber, reflective piece. And it's gone from that sort of like rather, you know, lightweight ditty that it was in the 60s. Like we were saying now, it's got very kinksy Beatles. I mean, what else are you getting from this?
Well, I mean, just the big fat red herring of calling it Like a Rocket Man.
Absolutely.
It's not actually about Elton at all. And it's not about, you know, anything to do with sci-fi or anything. I think that's great. And that's really clever. And I can imagine him chuckling to himself about that. And it also, I mean, the kind of thing it makes me think about is just generally the trend of his songwriting in this era, where he is marrying pitch dark themes with sunshiny pop-ish, you know, almost like, you know, 1960s Brit pop. It's almost psychedelic, you know, mid 60s to late 60s type vibe, you know, evoking the Kinks, not for the first time on the record. Just that kind of the music being a completely atmospheric juxtaposition to the lyrical world. And that you could listen to the song on multiple levels and it'll give you different things. I think it sits really well with that, with those. But yeah, and I think it isn't probably not quite as strong enough to go on the main record because it's so eccentric. And I'm saying that after knowing like how eccentric If You Can See Me and things like that are.
They're not eccentric at all. But this is definitely one of nature's B-sides, isn't it? You know, if you imagine a single on the A-side, you'd have had Where Are We Now or, I don't know, Love Is Lost or something. And then this would be on the B-side. And it'd be in the tradition of B-sides that you flip it over and there's something completely off the wall and completely unrelated to the A-side. And there it is. A palate cleanser, indeed. And I think it goes really, really well here. And again, I've got a quote from Tony here, which completely reflects what you were just saying now, is that the song has a deceptively bouncy beat, but lyrically it goes to a more dark place. And this time David sings it with David sings it with a cheeky smile.
He does.
So there we go. He does.
It's got that 60s sort of style to it. And I really like the line, I have no shape nor colour, I'm God's lonely man. That's a very good lyric.
Exactly. It's a very good lyric and buried all the way down here on the Next Day Extra. Yeah. Rattling on, and it's time for Born in the USA. I mean, sorry, Born in the UFO. The saucer land, she glided through the mist in an A-line skirt, perusing her shoes like hooves in the dirt, her clutch bag reflected
Well, apparently this one was written in the 70s. Well,
was
no,
it?
But listen, it doesn't make sense because, well, he had to have written some of it after 1984 when Born in the USA came out because it quotes it. But then you've got people saying on a number of different occasions and in the press that this was based on an unreleased track from Lodger, in the Lodger sessions.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and that the demo that he shared with everyone had Dennis Davis playing on it, so.
Be great to hear that demo, wouldn't it?
It'd be amazing. But I mean, I can kind of hear how it's bolted together because I think that the verse that begins with Born in the USA and then it kind of lurches on with this weird sort of Bruce Springsteen sort of impression. but then when it gets to the pre-chorus, gets all spiky and post-punk and it makes sense and it sounds, do you know what I mean? Like, we were, all that bit is like really cool and it sounds of its era. It sounds of the late 70s. It's like
that
a Frankenstein
song.
That is
very 1979. And it's got that kind of Farfisa organ sound.
Yeah, that organ sound, which reminds me of B-52s and you know, Elvis Costello and stuff. And I just think it has that angular quality, some of it, but then that weird, you know, Born in the USA and that first verse where he's sort of doing that Springsteen ripoff doesn't quite work. And it must have been written later, so he must have bolted the two together. Because Born in the USA definitely came out in the mid-80s, and it was written earlier, but...
Well, I think it came out in 84, didn't it? 84, 85?
Yeah, it came out in 84, but I mean, he wrote it earlier in the 80s, but there's no way that whole song was written in 78 is the point that I make. CSI Bowie, we're figuring it out.
It's such a strange combination of things, isn't it? So bring together this musical motif that's so reminiscent of Springsteen and bolt it together with something from 1979 with the kind of spooky organ sound. You know, it's got that kind of like B-movie, schlocky vibe to it around the chorus as well. This kind of like, I married a monster girl from outer space sort of vibe going on. You know, she was all courage, geometric face, electric skin, plastic and lace, silver hair, trapezoid flanks. I was so in love with her lavender vest. She was not like other girls. No kidding, David.
That's not the lyric, is it? It's lavender breasts. Are you reading again from davidbowie.com?
Is it lavender breasts or
aren't
lavender
you?
Vest? Yes. Yes, I am.
It's breasts.
I thought it was vests. I was so in love with that lavender vest.
I've got the lyrics. Look, here we go again. I've got the lyrics right here. Right. Born in a UFO. Electric skin, plastic and lace, silver hair, trapezoid flesh. I was so in love with her lavender breasts.
Well, okay. Lavender breasts.
No.
Or lavender vest.
Lavender mesh.
Oh, God, now we have a third option, lavender mesh.
Yes,
I was so in love with her
mesh. It's hard to read because literally the text, it cuts and I have to actually turn the page. Yeah, let's go that again. Yeah, so she was all Courage's geometric face, electric skin, plastic and lace,
silver hair,
trapezoid flanks.
Oh, flesh. Okay, I've got flanks.
Trapezoid flesh. I was so in love with her lavender mesh.
What's a mesh?
I just thought it was breast. Mesh, lavender mesh. She was all fresh, geometric face, electric skin, plastic and lace, silver hair, trapezoid flesh. I was so in love with her lavender mesh. She was my lavender girl.
Lavender vest kind of makes sense. Lavender breasts is pushing it. Lavender mesh is pure WTF.
Well, look, I was wrong. I thought it was breasts. Yeah, I always heard it that way. Because I like
listeners,
the idea of lavender breasts.
Feel free to write in with your suggestions.
This is what the booklet says, the language booklet from the Next Day Extra box set. And it says lavender mesh.
Okay, so. well, we're going to take mesh then. That's what it is.
we have to take him at his word.
Just on that point, while I was Googling lyrics just now, I found this quote from Tony again.
Did he say lavender breasts?
Sadly, Tony doesn't illuminate that particular question. He says, it's quite a dense piece of music with relentless, fast-paced lyrics. He added, this song could have been recorded during Lodger. It's got those kinds of chords.
This is how you comment on a song without commenting on the song at all.
Exactly.
Fast-paced lyrics. That's what it's all about.
Listeners, what do you think? Lavender mesh, lavender breasts, or lavender vest? You choose. Lines are open now. Okay, next up, we have Articula.
Today, today, it's the 1st of May. Everything around us, everything alive. Your heart's beating fast as we race through the dark. Cause the really good people who do what they told.
A Bowie Leonard composition, which I think is the only such credit. Definitely
and
on this
song
record.
This song became the finale for the deluxe version of The Next Day.
Right.
Which I annoyingly bought on vinyl. And so now it doesn't end with the kind of, you know, patchouli velvet perfume of Heat. It ends with this, which I'm annoyed about.
What are your thoughts on this? Is this a worthy song to end on?
I'm just gonna lump it back in that category of the stodgy rock songs. It's a sort of stadium song that rouses everybody up. I, you know, Boss of Me, You Will Set the World, this, I mean, they're not my favourites.
No.
But that's probably like maybe my own bias for the more atmospheric tracks showing through. It's just a little bit dumb for me. But, you know, it's also, it fits with the theme with the songs of exile and displacement and refugees and immigrants and, you know, it works with that sort of little thread that he was exploring. Also with Emily Lazarus and the kind of Statue of Liberty and all that, you know, coming to America type deal. That all sort of, there's a cloud of that, isn't there, hovering around this time.
Yes.
Where he's thinking about Lazarus, the musical, and thinking about Emily Lazarus. And he also mentions that Emily Lazarus poem to Michael Cunningham. So it does seem like he was exploring these songs about immigration.
I get the feeling that a lot of these songs were composed perhaps with an eye to the musical. You know, he's got a small number of very, very juicy topics that he wants to explore with an eye to the Lazarus musical. And this surfeit of songs that we have, various attempts to kind of get to that, to articulate these themes, you know, coming from slightly different angles lyrically.
Yeah, I think, you know, if someone trustworthy came forward and said, yeah, you're right, this bunch of songs from The Next Day and The Next Day Extra were actually songs that he'd been writing for a musical that didn't happen, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I believe you, because it seems that way. But, you know, it's just hard for us to know. And at the same time, not knowing kind of makes them more interesting, doesn't it? Because if we did know for sure, this song's got name-checked characters that I don't even know who they are. There's apparently like a Sophie who can't sing, but they're going to have some kind of future in America. I mean, without the historical references that are, you know, put in there to make it have some depth, it's just, it's hard for it to sort of be something you can engage with outside of a narrative. And yeah, it's totally plausible that if he was actually working on a musical for a lot of that time that he was away, that he'd have songs lying around. So
yeah.
Doesn't that make sense? And then we've got the Next Day Extra, all these songs. What's he going to do with them otherwise? You know, so get the band to play them, produce them, put them on the next day extra.
And now we come to the penultimate song.
We didn't talk about Plan either, but that's okay. That's cool. That's only an instrumental.
We missed Plan. It comes here as number three.
We also missed Rather Be High Venetian Mix, but we talked about that already.
Yeah, yeah. I think we
mentioned that. That's great.
I think we both basically raved about that when we talked about the track on the album.
We've said our piece.
Yeah, yeah, that's okay.
God bless the girl. God Bless the Girl is a sort of gospel. So I think it was called Gospel. The demo for it at some point was called Gospel, and it's got Henry Hay playing this sort of rousing. Yeah, and it's about a woman called Jackie who apparently loves her work, but also seems to be trapped in a situation where she's sort of, it's a traumatic situation where she kind of can't escape from. And the lyric is like, she's too afraid to run away like a slave without chains. Mm. And it's a really dark lyric, and it gets worse and worse because, like, it sort of suggests that, you know, wonder turns to danger, spring turns to winter, fire turns to water, light becomes darkness. You know, the years pass so swiftly, but this girl, she can't escape the situation. And then that line about, I don't want to hurt you, I just want to have some fun. God bless the girl. And it just seems to me like that lyric has got such a dark edge to it. And the music is so jubilant and celebratory.
Do you think that lyrically it's kind of presaging Sue?
B.
It's got that kind of very bleak view from a protagonist's point of view of this female character. And it just keeps getting darker and darker.
Yeah, it's... I kind of think that there might be something in the girls and the girl from Lazarus and the women that he evokes in the next day and the whores and Sue and all this. And and the girls, you know, the girls on Black Star all sort of get the upper hand eventually, you know, particularly about, you know, Girl Loves Me and all of that stuff. I think, you know, vaguely in the background, I can almost sniff a kind of, there's a logic to the representation of women. And I think the next day is, there are moments of like sort of troubling misogyny from the perspective of the person who's voicing the lyrics. I'm not going to say it's, you know, it's Bowie at all, but it's definitely just a perspective from a character. But it is there. It's, you can't ignore it. In the language.
I mean, we've got the character in Valentine's Day, for example, articulating that narrative and so on. And it's very careful, precise use of this word. You mentioned this thing earlier about the use of the word whore, and you were saying how jarring it sounds. And I just thought, yeah, that you know, that's true. And then I remember when I first heard "Tis a Pity She Was a Whore," and how odd, you know, how strange it is quite
it's
in your face.
It does give you pause, And I think as well, you know, the next day is just full of different kinds of frail and fractured and fragile masculinity. You know, Valentine, you've got boys pointing guns at each other in the sand. You've got corpses. You've got perverted priests. I mean, every song you've got, you know, liars and fathers who run the prison. There's all these men that are problematic throughout, these spies, these duplicitous, double-crossing people. It's interesting when you sort of, like, I don't know, take a meta view of the sort of the gendered stuff going on in the next day. I haven't analysed it to much depth, but I am interested in sort of, like, in this last period, particularly with, you know, the characters in Lazarus and the way that the male and the female are kind of presented on Black Star. I think it's potentially quite deep, and I wonder if it's sort of exploring these Jungian ideas of the animus and the anima, and, you know, the sort of the different sides of the psyche, and also just the way that violence is perpetuated in one direction, usually towards the other. And yeah, I think there's something there. I wish I could say something more intelligent and conclusive about it. This song in particular,
that's a really good point.
Points towards this sort of phenomenon. I think that he's got something to say, you know. About that. He's sort of speaking up about misogyny, but he's sort of couching it in a song where it's got this wonderful, you know, almost jubilant, spiritual, rousing, you know, kind of spirit. And then this song, which has a really dark edge to it, the lyric.
And as we're seeing, that's a theme that continues across this album. Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of tricks you into sort of stepping in the door, and then he shuts the door behind you, and you're stuck with this horrible idea. And it's like, oh, God, to sit here with this now. And, you know, and it's interesting. Of all the ones that give me disquiet, and a lot of the songs on The Next Day do, this is one of the more powerful ones for me. Just the way that it's put together. It gives me the heebie-jeebies for sure. That's why I like it a lot.
Yeah. For the priceless man who suffers gloom so slow, eyes are stolen for her, the sleeping sky takes the moon so she. Slow.
Oh, well, look, see, this one kind of proves what I just said wrong, doesn't it? Because this one's not about misogyny at all.
Each of the songs takes a perspective.
I think this is a really lovely song.
Mm.
And I think it's the way it's put together, it's got this sort of naive, heartfelt quality to it, which I really like. I should listen to it more. It's hard to find, you know. I mean, I don't tend to have a CD player around me, so I tend to sort of listen to this stuff online, and this one's just not streaming.
Mm.
On Spotify or anything, so you have to sort of go to YouTube to hear it, or I have to sit down with The Next Day Extra and put it on and like fast forward through all the songs to get to the last one to hear this.
Yeah.
I tend not to do it, so I haven't lived with this one so much, but I do really love its sort of quality. It's got this warmth to it, which I really like. And the lyric in it, "The Only One and All Alone," is a lyric that reminds me of Scott Walker, in the sense that my ex-colleague Scott Wilson wrote a book called Scott Walker and the Song of the One All Alone. And it's this idea of sort of, you know, finding sort of somebody, but actually all you do is you find yourself. You're all alone in the world. You know, this sort of concept is quite existential. But I think it's a really sweet song. I like it a lot. What sets this one apart is that for all the ones that have this sort of sunshiny quality, you can almost guarantee the lyric's going to be disquieting. And this one, not so much. It's just a sunshiny song. So it's...
It kind of almost catches you unawares, doesn't it? Because by now you've been set up to feel that there's something deceptive going on, that, you know, you're very suspicious of a sparkling melody or a joyous harmony. And here it's like, oh.
Where's the razor blade in the candy apple? It's just an apple.
When's he going to sock me in the face with some devastating lyric? Oh, no, he's not. It's all fine. And that was Leah Cardos and myself discussing the last part of The Next Day, The Next Day Extra. And a massive thanks to Leah for her endless patience and generosity with these conversations as we travelled across the wide plains of The Next Day, Bowie's longest album. It's really been an enlightening experience for me. On this album, to be honest, I used to slightly lose track of things about halfway through. So, as with many of these podcast conversations, Leah's insights and thoughts have really brought it all to life for me. So, thank you for listening to it and for sticking with us. Please keep in touch, and I'll be back soon with another new episode, a new guest, and a new Bowie album for your delectation. Till then, take care, and bye for now.